Welcome to our podcast series, Talking with Traders, hosted by expert trader Garth McKenzie in London, from where he's interviewing various guests on the topic of trading.
Welcome to Season 3 of the Talking with Traders podcast series with me, Garth McKenzie. Backed by popular demand following the first two seasons, I'll bring you a string of interviews over the next 10 weeks with a number of seasoned traders in my network to give you a first-hand insight into how they trade the world's financial markets so successfully. The first two seasons of this podcast have had over 20,000 downloads of the interviews, so I've used this traction to seek greater global reach for the third season. A special word of thanks must go to our sponsors, IG Markets, for continuing to fund this podcast and to allow it to flourish. In season three of Talking with Traders, I've gone beyond the borders of South Africa to speak to traders from across the globe. I'll ask pertinent questions of each of my guests to really try and get them to open up about what makes them consistently successful when it comes to taking on the world's financial markets. This episode of Talking with Traders takes us across to the USA to Savannah, Georgia, and I'm joined by Joe Bassett, who is ex-South African with AG Capital in South Africa, was in Cape Town originally, but moved across to the USA and is based there now and trading out of that region. Joe, welcome to Talking with Traders.
God, thanks. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. I'm just going to correct one part of your introduction there. Not ex-South African. I've lived there for 15 years, and I've got a South African wife and four kids that were born there, but I was born and raised in America.
Okay, so hence the accent
That's it. Well, when I come here, since I've come back here, people tell me I have an accent as well, so everybody thinks I've got an accent.
I guess we all have an accent, right? Depends on where you're situated and who you're talking to.
Exactly.
Joe, thanks for joining me. I really am looking forward to chatting to you on this podcast. Let's go back to the beginning of your career. What got you interested in trading? And tell us a little bit about your early years and your path to get to where you are now.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So I had maybe a little bit of a commonality with some other people that I got into financial markets, and that my father bought some shares for me in a company when I was about 12 or 13. And it was a paper company that was about 30 minutes down the road from us. And, I used to look at it in the paper every day and follow the stock price. And it's amazing just in getting involved like that, how it kind of turns your mind to the subject, and you think about it, and you ask a random question here or there. And so I started following that stock price, and I started asking my dad some questions, and eventually maybe I was 14 or 15, and he took me to see his stockbroker eventually, and asked some questions to him. And then a couple of years later, as I got a little bit older and a little bit more intelligent and had figured a few things out, I was asking my dad some really hard questions, and he took me back to see a stockbroker, and the stockbroker actually couldn't answer all my questions, because I think a lot of stockbrokers are more salesmen than they are market guys. And so anyway, the bug bit me early from that standpoint. When I got to college, the day I turned 18, I opened an Ameritrade account and funded it with some money that I saved up from stringing tennis rackets in high school. And I was off. I mean, that was 1999. It was my freshman year of college, the fall of 1999. And that was obviously the absolute height of the tech boom. And I was reading, MSN Money Central and, Yahoo Finance and a handful of just generic accounts. And it was just littered with stuff on tech companies. And I put $3,000 into this account, and I had $10,500 by first quarter of 2000. And that was with no leverage. That's just what was going on with the market. I had no freaking clue what I was doing at all. You know, just reading articles and think, oh yeah, that sounds cool. This company sounds interesting. I'll buy some of that. But I was, you know, I went from 3,000 to 10,500, I think in March of 2000, from 10,500 down to 3,700 about 3 months later, or maybe 4 months later. And I was absolutely disgusted. You know, I'd been making plans for some of that money, and I sold all of the stock. Luckily, I sold it all, and kind of realized I had no idea what I was doing. But that furthered my interest, and I, you know, was dabbling in, you know, stocks primarily for the rest of the time that I was in college, and kind of knew from there that that was trading and being in markets was one of the two or three things that I was going to want to do, going out into the future. So that's really where I got my start. I ended up in South Africa. That's just a long story. Met some guys there in markets and then kind of never left. So I really got my professional start trading South African equities. And then that just expanded over time.
Yeah, fascinating story. And I think that's such a common story that you tell guys that start out to make some money and then blow up an account almost at some point. Pretty much everybody that I've spoken to on this podcast series has followed that journey. And it's almost like a rite of passage to get into the markets, I guess. But, you know, since then, you've obviously done very, very well. I was introduced to you by a mutual contact of us who said to me, you've got to talk to Joe. He's a 0.1 percenter. And for those listening to the podcast who don't know what that is, it means that basically you're better than 99.9% of other people that try and do this. So you've clearly done some things right, and you've formulated a strategy, and you've progressed significantly from those early years. Tell us about your strategy and what you trade now, Joe.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know about the, you know, that sort of ratio, but I appreciate that, whoever said it. My strategy now is completely, you know, evolved like everything else. I started in day trading South African equities, which is, I think, not when I started, probably wasn't all that dissimilar to trading U.S. equities. I mean, I started in 2005, and you know, the South African stock market was hot. I mean, there were a lot of international players. It was a, you know, commodity boom that had followed on the ultra low policy rates that Greenspan enacted in 2001, and we were, you know, South Africa was flying. Everything was doing well. If it was, you know, commodities space was just absolutely on fire. There were a lot of international players. There was just so much going on, and things were really flourishing in South Africa. I mean, I remember at the time the central bank was selling rands and buying foreign currency in the market to just keep the rand weak, or keep it from strengthening past 6-1. And it was like that for a couple of years when I got here. It was a different time. And, you know, there was really good liquidity in the market and a lot of, hot money kind of going in and out. So it was a good time to learn. It was probably a very good time from an opportunity standpoint to be learning. But my strategy then, was literally one as an opportunist. I would come in and I'd have no position coming into the day, and I'd read everything that I could get my hands on, whether that's, analysts, recommendations, changes and upgrades and downgrades. News flow was really the most important part. I would sit down at my desk and I'd kind of run through, okay, what happened yesterday? What was the theme yesterday? Is that going to continue on today? Is there something news-wise that's going to potentially change the theme? Is there something news-wise, from a single stock standpoint that's really going to drive something, whether that's up or down? And that was really it. That was kind of the basis of of how I, came into the market. That's really where I started. There's still, make no mistake, that is still the basis of my trading. And it's evolved a lot, and there's a lot more complexities to it, but that's really where it started. After that, I started to learn a lot about technical analysis. I read a lot. I watched a lot of other people go through their thought processes from a technical standpoint. I added that tool set to my trading repertoire, where I would use that less on a daily basis, on an intraday basis, but more on a swing trading basis. And I still do use it as a big aspect to my swing trading basis. And I would say one thing that I've probably left out here, and maybe goes back a little bit to my initial roots, is that I did economics at school, and not that I'm a proper economist of any sorts, but I definitely have that sort of thought process in my background. And I've always, so from an information standpoint and a news flow standpoint, one of the first ways that I really think about it is how that's going to trickle down and affect the stocks from a macro standpoint, how it's going to affect the stocks and how that. So one of the things that I also really look for, and I would say it's probably been one of my biggest differentiators in terms of being starting as a day trader, is I was really looking closely at shifts in the macro theme. And when I would see those shifts happening, it would really give me confidence. And when I saw those shifts happening along with the trade action, often I'd see the shift happening before the trade action really really followed it. But when those things lined up, I'd be really strong in my convictions, and I could really size up in my trading. And that's really it. So, yeah. And all of that's just evolved, and I've just added little pieces and additional indicators or things of that nature that I've added to my trading process over the years to kind of really build it out to a fuller process.
Right. Now, I mean, you said you started out as a day trader. So are you still very much a day trader, or do you carry positions overnight? What's the average time frame that you'll hold a trade for generally?
Both. I mean, I would say the average time that I hold a trade now is probably somewhere between 24 and 48 hours. It really just depends. I find that a lot of the real pushes that I get out of stocks, in terms of the meaty part, the part that I feel like I have a high conviction for, those are generally kind of not more than a 2 day portion where I really have that sort of high conviction. And sometimes it might be, one day, but not more than 2 days where I really feel like it's meaty and I've got all the cylinders firing at the same time.
Right. Yeah. And now you're based in the States. So, I mean, I presume that's, you're trading primarily US market, or are you still looking at the South African market as well?
I do still look at South African market, and I do still look at, I look at everything really from an equity standpoint. South African equities were a real focal point for me until really kind of the last couple of years, where they've started to fade out a little bit. I do still look at them. I've still, still semi-actively am trading those. But it's not the focal point anymore. The focal point is definitely on US equities at the moment, and just, global assets. I think there's a good opportunity set. Been spending a lot of time on the metals this year. That both the equity side and the future side. I've traded a lot of EM currency this year. That's been pretty good to me. The focus now is really more US equities than anything. And I'll tell you why that's also kind of the focus, not just because of my geographical footprint at the moment or where I am specifically in the world. But right now, I mean, U.S. equities is where the game is, you know. I'm a very strong proponent of, you obviously have to trade what you know, but you have to be in a place where the game is good, and there's no better place for a good game right now than U.S. equities. There's just so much happening here.
Well, that's it. There is so much happening, and there's so much more choice there than in the South African market. And I know in my own business, I'm also slowly trying to transition across to the US just because there's so much more available to trade. But from a trading dynamic perspective, have you found that your skill set that you effectively germinated, I guess, on the South African market, and you started out successfully trading South African equities, you've then migrated across to the USA. Has that been fairly seamless? I mean, there's a thinking that a chart is a chart and the market dynamics are the same. It doesn't matter what market you're looking at, whether it's an equity or a currency or a bond or a commodity. Would you agree with that? Or have you found that there are different dynamics to trading the US equity markets relative to the South African market?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the skill set is completely translatable. Look, I've been, trading in the States before, throughout the entire part that I was in South Africa. It wasn't necessarily my primary focus on a day-to-day, but I've been trading things there. So I kind of have, I've maintained a familiarity with the market and with a lot of the stocks, but there are a couple things that I would say are pretty common here in the US that aren't very common in South Africa. One, as an example, is just, the sort of sheer level of the moves. The moves in a lot of the tech companies, a lot of the more some of the electric car makers, you get IPOs in the States and the thing will be gapping, trade 120, 150% up on the day. You know, you get moves in some of these EV companies, or, it can be any of them, actually, even some of the large caps, they just move a lot more. And, you can get some of these trend days where you get like a gap and go move on a stock. It might gap up 5, 6, 7, 8, 10%. Next thing you know, it's up 20% on the day. I mean, it's the last time you've seen a stock move 20% a day in South Africa. That wasn't like, detrimental news or something, crazy going. Every day you can find something moving like that here in the States at the moment. And that is a completely, completely different game. But at the same time, it's just, it is just an added dimension to what you would already see in South Africa.
Okay, super. Now, your time frame of holding, 24 to 48 hours, it's very short term. So what is your approach to risk when it comes to that? And also leading on from that sort of question, I guess, is what type of leverage are you looking at when you take these type of positions? Because over 24 to 48 hours, I mean, obviously you can get some meaningful moves over that time frame, but you're in a grander scheme of things, I guess you're playing for smallish moves.
Yeah, I mean, look, it really depends on if you're talking about the day trading sort of aspect, or the day trading days relative to now, where I'm, managing money inside my fund. I'll separate the two out. Inside my funds, I have been very traditionally, I enter positions at no more than a 10% weighting in the fund when I enter. Depending on what type of trade it is, if it's a momentum trade, if it's a technical trade, if it's a news-driven trade, I will add to them in different manners. But I usually won't, from an equity standpoint, I won't get bigger than about 30-35% of NAV inside my positions, and that's like, those are not that common. They are when I have real conviction and you know, I'm wanting to get bigger in a name. Generally, if I'm running my book and I've got 10 positions on, they're probably somewhere between 8 to 15% of NAV, and I'm pretty constantly running, I would say, closer to gross leverage. I'm probably at 150% of NAV is where I'm most common at. Now that's on the hedge fund side. I mean, when I'm from a prop trading standpoint, that's a completely different ball game where you're really kind of keeping things tighter, but the leverage is much greater, significantly greater. And I've never felt like people always ask you about leverage and what you're willing to risk. And from a prop trading standpoint, that's the leverage is irrelevant, really, to me. It's just kind of what you're willing to risk on a trade. Because a lot of guys will, be prop trading on the amount of money that they have on deposit relative to the leverage, and they're not, it doesn't really equate that well. So, from that standpoint, and from a prop trading standpoint, you have to keep the reins in so much tighter. You give yourself such little wiggle room, because any time that when you are prop trading, the leverage side of the equation is just so much higher.
So that's it. But then you mentioned the risk, and I mean, that's it exactly. The leverage is one concept and it's fine, but the risk and the risk of loss is really what actually matters at the end of the day. So do you have a limitation in terms of what amount of your capital you're willing to lose on an individual trade setup?
You're listening to Talking with Traders, a podcast series brought to you by IG, a world-leading online trading and investment provider. If you haven't checked out the IG online trading platform, please do so and visit IG.com. Also, make sure you subscribe to the podcast series on your favorite podcast app or website by clicking on the subscribe button, and you'll be notified weekly as we release new episodes.
Yeah. I do, ideally, and this is probably one of my weaker points as a trader, is that, and even as a manager, I typically never want to lose more than 3% on any one position in terms of 3% of NAV. And the problem becomes when you really have high conviction, you're getting yourself to a point from a position standpoint where you don't give yourself a lot of wiggle room. And that becomes difficult. You just play that on a case by case basis, I think, in terms of if you're going to allow yourself to go a little bit outside of that band as you get bigger, and you kind of get your position up to where it wants to where you want to be aggressive. And then the next complexity comes into an individual position relative to what you're willing to take as a drawdown as a fund as a whole. And generally, I want to keep that to not more than 10%. The moment that you really start to get up into the double digits, it becomes much more taxing to try to work back.
Right. Okay. Do you find trading stressful, Joe?
Absolutely. I mean, if you're not finding trading stressful in some form or another, then you're not taking enough risk, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I just don't see. I mean, look, if you have a 100% systematic approach, then yeah, maybe it's not so stressful because it's a system. But it's even if you've got a systematic approach, when you start to go off sides, in bigger numbers, or you're having one of your bigger drawdowns, which anyone in the market is going to have from time to time, it's stressful.
Yeah, no, for sure. I haven't asked that question to any of the other guests, by the way. It's the first time I've introduced that question to the podcast series, but I just thought it was interesting to ask you because your style is pretty unique relative to the other guys that I've spoken to, in the sense that your time frame is quite a lot shorter term than many of the others.
It's funny, I had a conversation with somebody I just met the other day, and they were like asking me about what I do. I said, trying to explain it to them. And I said, is it stressful? And I said, when's the last time that you went to work and lost money? And he was like, well, I can't lose money. I might not, have a good month or, and I was like, well, I can lose money any day that I walk into the office. It's just a little bit more stressful when when you can actually lose money, maybe not make money, but actually lose money.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, in this game, like you say, you can go to work and you can put in a hard day's work, a solid effort, and come home poorer for the effort.
Yeah.
So it obviously it is stressful, and it's how you manage that stress. And how do you manage that stress? I mean, tell us a little bit about your daily routine as a trader. How early do you get up? What sort of processes and routine do you follow on an average day?
Well, it really depends on what's happening. So, and I think that this is one of the keys to really being a good trader and to, separating yourself, is that recognizing the days, recognizing, the opportunities and, the big moments. So every day is not created equal, to the next in trading. There's certain days where if you've been around in the industry and you've been trading for a while and that sort of thing, which you before you get there, it's going to be a big trading day. There's going to be a lot going on. There's going to be a lot of volume. There's going to be some big moves, all that sort of stuff. And those are the days that I get up earlier and that I trade more, I get up earlier. I might do, twice the amount of reading. I might, all of that, put in all those sorts of additional efforts. And separating those becomes, I think, easier as you get a little bit older. I think that's a really important factor. Some of those days where it's really, really, going to be exciting and I'm jazzed up for the day. I'll wake up in the morning to see what's going on at the open in Europe, which is, call it 3 o'clock in the morning here, to watch for 30 minutes and then go back to sleep just so I can kind of see what the open was like. And then I'll wake that back up at six as an example. Other days I might just be waking up at six, certain days where, I don't think there's that much going on. I might wake up at six and not even have a look until 7:30 because I don't want to get myself, going. I don't want to get myself hooked in on something too early when I know it's not going to be a great where I don't think that there's going to be anything exciting going on in the trading day. So I think that's really important, is being able to really separate those out. I mean, just from a prep standpoint, I've got a routine about what I do when I get up in the morning. Actually, the first thing I do is look at prices when I wake up in the morning, because in my mind, when I go to bed the night before, I've got an expectation where I think prices are going to be, and based off of what's going on. And when those prices are significantly different, then I know I want to look then and say, hey, was there some news that drove those prices to be significantly different? Or, is this just action, or is flows that are coming in the market, that sort of thing. So that's really what I do. And then from that point I start my reading, which is comes from a variety of different sources, and I go from there.
Okay. All right. Now, something I've asked all of the guests on this podcast series is around their best trades and worst trades in their experience and in their careers. Those of us that have been around the market for a long time, all of us have a story. We have a number of memorable trades, both on the winning side and on the losing side. So I want to ask you about this as well. I mean, tell us about a trade that, let's start with your worst trade ever, and one that sticks in your mind.
Oof, worst trade ever. Well, some of those worst trades where you feel you've been hard done by, or you just didn't quite execute right, probably sat in my head more than some of the ones that maybe were bigger financial losses. In 2008. I hadn't been in the market that long as a professional, and I was, the learning curve was just so steep and so many things were happening that not only had I not seen before, but I'd hardly read about before, and saw some of these crazy moves happening. And, you know, I had been trading the VIX a bit that year. And, you know, my first experience trading the VIX and just, you know, learning how that works. And I understood the idea of how the VIX is supposed to work, but doesn't necessarily mean that that's how it is going to work. Well, I started shorting the VIX at 75 on the front month, thinking, okay, well, you know, I'm gonna just have this trade run in here, and you know, I'm gonna roll it. If it just gets higher, I'm gonna sit on this, and I'm gonna roll it, and I'm gonna fund it. Well, you know, I think that day, the next day, it was just kind of hung up there, was drifting up, and I was adding to it. Next thing you know, I think we pushed up to 87 or 89 or something like that. And
got close to 90. Same as
I was just sitting on this gargantuan loss, and it just, you know, kind of steamrolled on me, and I was just adding into it. And then, you know, as we got closer toward expiry, you know, I'm looking at the forward month, which is going to be front month, you know, a day later, 2 days later, and I'm like, why isn't this thing coming up? You know, if this thing's going to be front month, it was just, you know, I was going to be rolling into a $15, I can't even remember what it was at the time, or $17 discount. And I'm like, I can't roll into that, because, you know, if I roll into that and it pushes back up, you know, into the mid 80s, you know, I'm just going to get, absolutely murdered. And I took a big loss on that, cause I didn't roll it. And I just remember, you know, thinking that I had a lot of what I wanted to do was basically sell vol. I knew that I wanted to sell vol. I knew that vol was going to come down. I just had no idea how to do it appropriately, for, you know, where I was, you know, at the time from an experience standpoint. And I absolutely had my ass eaten alive off of that position. Mm. And funnily enough, and it's definitely not my best trade from a financial standpoint or anything like that, but it saved my ass on that account, which was really just my personal sort of swing account, was one of the trades that was, you know, right around that same time I had bought puts on oil. We got up to 100 and same thing. I faded out a couple oil contracts around $135 or so. I think we traded up 147 at the time.
Yep.
And
that was when Goldman Sachs said it was going to 200.
Yes. And I knew, I mean, from what I could see that this thing was coming to an end. I could just feel that, you know, between rates and oil and everything, it was going to drag on the economy, which obviously is going to start to hit, you know, hit demand, and this thing was going to roll over. And eventually what I did was I closed out the shorts and I bought $100 puts. And I bought $100 puts like 4 or 5 months out. I think I paid a dollar for them or something. I can't remember what it was. And if I'd held that trade, I think those puts became worth like $60 or something like that.
Wow.
And I didn't hold them anywhere close to that, but I did hold them long enough. I did hold them long enough to make all my VIX losses back. And anyway, that was just such an incredible learning experience to me. And two of the trades, and they happened right around the same time. And this is, you know, 12 years ago now, but they stick out to me as some of the most memorable trades I ever had, just because of the sheer learning experience of both of them.
Mm, fascinating. Fascinating. But Joe, do you think that trading is a innate skill, or is it, you know, or is it something that can be taught to anybody?
I think that it can be taught, but I think there are the vast majority of the people on this planet will struggle to ever have a successful career as a trader, and that is not necessarily something you're born with, but it's something that you've kind of developed in at some point in your life. Being able to kind of follow your instincts, being able to be honest with yourself, and being able to, or at least in the way that I trade, not being over analytical. I think a lot of the smartest people on earth really struggle as traders, and because their mind works in a way that's so analytical. When you really think of the way that markets move, the reason why markets move, it's so much of it is really more psychological than anything. So I think, for AG, I was running the hiring process and training the new traders for probably 4 or 5 years. And the real thing that I looked for as much as anything in my hires is really just two things, emotional intelligence and just sheer passion for it. Because for me, for people to get to a point of success in this game, you have to be passionate about it. There's just no other way that you're going to actually get there, even if you do have the skill set even if you are emotionally intelligent. And the other thing is, you've just got to be able to keep yourself emotionally in check all the time in order to make those good decisions, because you put rules in place and, you can do all sorts of things like that. But when you get emotional, your systems just start to break down. And that's really, I think, what separates a lot of the really great traders, from the people that can struggle to make it.
Yeah, absolutely. So if a youngster came to you now and they're, Joe Bassett, 13 years old, like you were, got an interest in the market and wants to make a career of this, what two or three pieces of advice would you give to a youngster starting out?
Number one would literally just to be to get involved, you'd have to ask your parent to open an account, because I don't think you can open anything until you're 18, but I'd say, fund it, work in the yard or wash your parents' car, do something like that, get $100 together and ask your dad to open an account for you and go, buy or sell some stocks, that you think are going to do well over the next little while. Mm-hmm. And, just get involved, because it's such an interesting, industry, and it can be so fascinating, when you're actually watching it. But when you don't have any skin in the game, it's just not the same. For me, one of the biggest things was as well, when guys used to come in the door, I've been trading this paper account and this sort of thing, whatever. And just might as well wad that up and throw it into the trash, because yeah. if it's not, anybody can do it when it's not real money. Maybe everyone can do it when it's not real money, but a lot more people can do it when it's not real money. Yeah. So that money becomes real. It becomes a lot different to make decisions. And so I think that that's the best thing that someone like that can do, is get involved. Obviously there's some great books, that can be read on the subject. Maybe at 13, some of them be a little bit over their heads, but a lot of great books as well.
Yeah. Well, that's the final question that I want to ask to you, Joe, is in terms of those great books, are there two or three that you think any trader should certainly read and most definitely should have on their shelf?
Well, I mean, one of the first classics that just comes to mind is Confessions of a Stock Operator. That book, which I believe is about 100 105 years old now or something like that.
Yeah, the story of Jesse Livermore.
Yes, that's just an absolute classic. I've actually got a coffee table edition of it, and I reread through about the first third of it again a week or two ago. It's just so many beautiful, you know, especially if you are, you know, kind of an order flow trade action type of trader. There's just so many pieces of gold in there. There are, you know, a lot of other great books. Mike Bellafiore, who's a friend of mine and, you know, great guy. Luckily, you know, I've had the chance to kind of meet him and you know, get to know him a little bit. His first book, I'm actually in the second book. He came down and was at our office for about a week and spent some time with us and went through some things with us for about a week, maybe 5-6 years ago. But his first book, One Good Trade, to me is a great book for people looking to get into prop trading. Another great book I think is it's Jack Swaggart's Market Wizards. It's a great one.
Yeah.
Those are the ones I guess that kind of come to mind first.
Yeah, and you're aware that Jack Swaggart is coming out with a new Market Wizards book in November.
I saw that.
Yeah, I can't wait to get my hands on that one and read that.
I know, me too.
Yeah, absolutely. Last thing, Joe, what do you do to unwind? I mean, obviously this business is quite stressful and it's all consuming. It's a passion for all of us that really love it, as you say, but you know, there's also a need to try and find some balance in life. So how do you unwind from the stresses of the market?
Well, I've got 4 kids, so most of my unwinding comes in the form of doing things with them, you know, getting in the pool with them and, you know, throwing the little guys around or getting outside and throwing a ball. Or my eldest son has gotten big into golf, so I'll get out on the golf course with him. And mostly things like that. I mean, we go out on the boat on weekends and things like that, but it's really kind of time with the kids. You know, that kind of helps me unwind and get my mind off of everything else.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, Joe, thanks so much for chatting to me. I've really enjoyed this last 45 minutes or so, getting some of your insights. I really do appreciate you talking to me on Talking with Traders, and I hope we can keep in touch and perhaps even talk again at some stage in the future.
Absolutely. Carl, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure.
Okay. Take care.
Thanks for joining us for today's episode of Talking with Traders, brought to you by IG, a world-leading CFD provider. We really are privileged to have such a leader in the field of online trading involved in this series. Please follow us on Facebook and engage with us there. And a reminder to make sure you subscribe to the series by clicking the subscribe button on your favorite app. Till next time.